Welcome to Center Stage Minnesota. I'm Charlie Polkerbeck. I'm going to be your host for this edition of our show at Northern Community Radio, where we focus on the talents of Minnesota musicians.
Here's Prudence Johnson and Dan Chouinard from their Is Gershwin release from 2003. Here's one called They All Laugh to get us started today on Center Stage Minnesota.
The odds were 100-1 against me. The world thought the heights were too high to climb. But people from Missouri never incensed me. No, I wasn't a bit concerned. For from history I had learned how many, many times the worm had. Christopher Columbus, when he said the world was round. They all laughed when Edison recorded sound. They all laughed at Wilbur and his brother when they said that man could fly. They told Marconi wireless was a phony. It's the same old cry. They laughed at
the grizzly bear under the light of the moon.
cool of the evening. Tell them I'll be there in the cool, cool, cool of the evening. Slick them on my hair when the party's getting a glow on and singing fills the air. If I ain't in the clink and there's something to drink, you can tell them I'll be there.
Dylan Hicks, Claude Debussy, Debussy from his Poughkeepsie release. That came out in 1998. Prudence Johnson before that, two, including Prudence Johnson, one from her Moon Country, the music of Hoagie Carmichael release, came out in 2002 in the cool, cool, cool of the evening. And then Prudence Johnson with Dan Chouinard from their Esquirshwin release from 2003, and they all laughed. We got a feature today coming up on Rich Madsen, so we're going to hear that coming up shortly, but we got one right now from The Replacements.
I wonder why I went through so many moving.
I love that song. That's the closing track on Levels, the most recent release from Rich Manson's band Ole Yeller, and it's called Love to Rock. That came out the very end of 2012. You're listening to Center Stage Minnesota on Northern Community Radio, and Center Stage Minnesota is our show at Northern Community Radio, where we focus on the talents of Minnesota musicians. I'm Charlie Polkerbeck. I'm your host for this edition of Center Stage Minnesota. And Center Stage Minnesota is an original series produced by Northern Community Radio and broadcast on the stations of Ampers. Find us online at kaxe.org. Program support comes from the Minnesota Arts and Cultural Heritage Fund. Rich Madsen's story is long. He's written so many great songs, it's almost impossible to even approach it. It's a long, long story, especially if you want to get into the quality of his songwriting, but that's just part of the story. He went from the Iron Range down to the Twin Cities in the late 80s and then formed the Glen Russells. That band was flirting on the edge of breaking through to the stratosphere when a lot of bands were doing that during the 90s. They were right in there. And then he formed Ole Yeller after that. About 2005, moved up to back to the Iron Range. He had a studio, recording studio down there called Flowerpot Studios for a long time. Many people recorded with him. And then he opened up Sparta Sound up in Sparta and has been up on the Iron Range ever since. Integral in forming IROMA, Iron Range Original Music Association, and has had a very positive influence on everything having to do with original music on the Iron Range. So that kind of lets you know briefly some of the history of Rich Madsen. Now my conversation with Rich Madsen. Was there something about growing up in general, but particularly on the Iron Range, that has something to do with the way that you became a do-it-yourself guy, which seems to have led you into the other side of your musical career that's probably less visible to the public than writing, performing, and recording, which is your recording studios that you've owned and operated going back some time now, Flowerpot and then Sparta Sound, Flowerpot in Minneapolis and Sparta Sound up in Sparta.
I guess maybe it has something to do with it. It's not something that I really see in myself, but I guess that you always hear about how Iron Rangers generally have a pretty good work ethic. Northerners have a good work ethic. I hear it all the time if I'm down south, you know, hear about people from Minnesota going down there and getting these jobs and getting it done right away, you know. But as far as doing everything myself, well, the first time I was in a recording studio, I just looked at what the guy was doing, and I just immediately took an interest to it. And I remember recording our practices when I was in high school, and then our bass player plugged everything into a mixing board. You know, he put a microphone on the bass amp, put a microphone on our guitar amps, and a couple of mics on the drums, and we recorded our practices that way, and that was a revelation to me. I just thought, wow, this is really cool that you can do all this. And then I started seeing these cassette 4-tracks come out. You know, I just had to have one, you know, right away. I was like, I got to have one of these 4-tracks. This is great. I can record my music, because I was learning how to play drums, bass, and guitar kind of at the same time, favoring the guitar because that's more of a songwriting tool. But having a 4-track, you know, I could play all the instruments and play it back for people to show them, you know, give them a loose arrangement of how the song goes, get them interested in it anyway.
Well, it seems like a lot of musicians are, I don't know if they're intimidated and think that they need professionals and can't do it themselves, or I mean, that's maybe getting less the case, and part of that's probably technology. But at the time you did this, most bands were going to studios, and it seemed like it almost seemed like you just said, I'm not going to do that, I'm going to do it myself.
Oh, I definitely had to go to studios at first, and you know, really I got to thank Tom Herbers for showing me a lot of what he did, you know, just watching him and asking questions. And another great sound engineer that I worked with was Tim McLaughlin. He was real open about showing me how it works and everything. And Leo Whitebird was another guy down in the cities that kind of took me under his wing. And, you know, and I'm not against people, you know, going to other studios, you know, bands that I've recorded, they'll take it somewhere else. And, you know, I'd bounce around the studios. Before I had my own workshop, you know, I'd bounce around to different studios, check out different techniques. But I don't know, I think that's just something I have a natural aptitude for is recording and listening. I mean, when I listen to music, I just kind of listen to the sounds and kind of go, how do they do that, you know? And a lot of the modern music, I'm really going, how did they do that? I'm a little bit perplexed.
Now, Tim McLaughlin, is that's not the same as Tim Mack, is it?
Tim Mack, yeah.
Okay, and he mm-hmm. was kind of the go-to guy for a lot of the heavier bands.
Yeah.
Especially mm-hmm. AMRAP.
Yeah, he recorded some of that early Glenn Russell stuff.
Is he still around? I was just talking about him.
I don't think he does much recording, if at all. He kind of got out of it.
So you didn't have training as a sound engineer. I guess your training was sort of by observing, and now you're running a business. And so
it's kind of trial by fire. I did take a few classes, and you know, it was mostly just the generosity and the kindness of fellow engineers. I remember walking into the 400 bar and you know, doing live sound. Well, I got that job because the guy that was doing sound there was doing it 7 nights a week for like 2 months straight, and I said, hey, if you need a night off, you know, I had a couple of beers in me. I just said, hey, if you need a night off, I can do sound. Because I felt like I could. And I kind of did because I set up sound for, you know, a small stage. You know, I set up two mics or you know, brought in a PA to gigs all since high school and everything. I mean, this was a little different because these are some, you know, they got some big bands in there. And I had to be kind of Johnny on the spot there and know how to fix stuff if it broke. So I took to it. I had to learn pretty fast.
Brian Herb was the first one that probably described his description of your place in the sound, when you had Flower Pot down there in the mid-90s was, he said that, you know, Rich is a guy that kind of proven that you don't have to have, you know, $500,000 studio to make a good record. You were working off an 8-track recording, and it was, you know, you didn't have the I mean, mm-hmm. your equipment was not poor, but it wasn't the most expensive that people mm-hmm. could buy, and you were still recording both for yourself and other people mm-hmm. records that sounded really good. So what about that? Is there anything to say about that?
Well, I just try to keep a low overhead, and, you know, my studio is put together piece by piece, you know. I started doing it in about 1991. Well, really, 85 was when I got my first 4-track and started figuring out how to do it little by little. But, you know, one mic at a time, one piece of outboard gear at a time. Mic cords, you know, I'd dig them out of the trash and fix them, you know, solder them back together, you know, just get something that works.
Circles throughout the house. Was he trying to get out? try to catch him in a cardboard box. You bit your poor little shoulder. Now you're frothing at the mouth. Remember the time that we ran out of gas on the freeway. We were talking so much, didn't notice that we were running out. So young and in love, I was swearing. Or did it? Well, I guess that depends upon who you talk to. Nobody cares enough to talk to you the way that I used to. How could she ever forgive me? Such a big mouth, such beautiful scaly skin, and I'm not talking about fishing, and I'm not talking about gardening.
Well, that was Big Mouth. That came out on In Spiral Notebooks, which is an interesting solo release with Rich Madsen's name on it. It's basically a compilation of songs and then song ideas, I think, probably various different things where he'd pen part of the lyrics or all of the lyrics, or for whatever reason, probably, I think, going back to the Glenn Russells on up through when he started putting it together around 2006-07. Something you can do when you've got your own studio, finishing off some of those songs that he thought had merit and never really, either they didn't fit in to a band or, you know, there's just things that you leave behind when you got a lot of creative projects, not all of them come to completion. And there's some of them that you want to go back and do that with. That's kind of what that record was, In Spiral Notebooks. And that's Big Mouth from Rich Madsen here on Center Stage, Minnesota. Continuing with my conversation with Rich Madsen.
When I think about important songwriters who have come from the Iron Range, after the obvious and probably permanent occupier of the number one position, Bob Dylan, I'd put you, Rich Madsen, in the second position. And you're still, your story, well, obviously Bob's is too, but in terms of being in Minnesota, you came back up to northern Minnesota, and you're still, you know, adding chapters, both in terms of the music you create and the other aspects of it. I know you respect Bob Dylan's body of work. You're both from the Iron Range. After that, you two seem to differ more than you are similar when I actually start thinking about it. Have you ever thought about that? What do you think about that?
Well, first of all, Bob's a genius. I don't know. I don't know if I can even be. I can't put myself in that. In his anywhere near Bob. He's the king, and he's a living legend. I don't know how anybody can even compare. And the fact that he's still doing it is pretty amazing. at his age that he goes out and performs every night. Some people say he doesn't have it anymore. I don't know. It's just the fact that he's still doing it. It's just unbelievable.
I just saw something on the internet the other day, him examining a metal sculpture. He's evidently getting into that. It looked like it was found objects that he's welding together. And
oh, really?
Yeah, so it's pretty interesting because he's just got this really, like you can tell the wheels are turning in his brain as he's looking at it. Well, I guess, you know, in terms of musically, and I'm sure it's hard for you to be anything but humble in that situation, but when I think about songwriting, you don't seem like you love to be flashy. You're more about like the meat and potatoes, and some really damn good meat and potatoes is hopefully your approach, but or what you hope to come up with. And I just think when I think of some of your songs, like Under the Tree is probably going to go down as one of my favorite Minnesota songs ever, and I don't really care what else comes along at this point. It's pretty impressive to me.
Thanks a lot.
Is there anything else about being from the Iron Range that has affected you as a musician, or either sort of, maybe not directly, but just about how it formed you? I think about when I talk about the do-it-yourself before, you know, there's something about northern Minnesotans, like you said, but there's also something about the Iron Range where it's like there's almost there's an attitude like where there's, we can do this, I can do this,
yeah. You know? Yeah, well, you know, a guy put it pretty good in this. There was a documentary about the Iron Range that came out a while back by a guy named Doug Nimnick. And one of the things that he kept coming back to was, don't get too big for your britches. You know, like, don't think you're hot. Shh. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
don't think you're too cool for school. You know, you know, stay true to your roots and you know, don't come around here thinking you're all top dog, you know. And I don't know, I don't subscribe to anything like that, but it's just natural.
Well, you know, versus I get the impression that if people were standing around talking about how to do something for too much longer than about 10 minutes, you'd just go over and start doing it.
yeah, it'd be a lot of blah, 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 blah. And then it's like somebody's got to just step in and start doing it. And as far as the Iron Range influencing me, I came back here and I still take a walk in the woods and I just feel that inspiration come over me, just the smells and the light, especially in the fall, you know, it's just, I don't know, there's something about that that just kind of inspires me, keeps me going.
And being a performing musician that gets stuff out there these days, I imagine the balance is pretty good in terms of being able to get down into the city once in a while and enjoy that too.
Yeah. Well, yeah, I miss a lot of my friends down there, and it's great to be able to go down there and play music still, and I want to keep doing that. You know, once a month or every couple months. It's great to get down there and try to make a weekend out of it.
You know, in terms of your own impression of your music and then finding out fans or other people that like your music in terms of which songs they like and which songs you like or you feel good about, does that differ much? And is it ever perplexing? And what's your thoughts on how you might think about that differently than the listener?
Well, you know, when I'm recording a band in the studio, there'll be one song that the singer will be like, "Oh, I hate this song," and the first thing I'll say is, "Well, that means it's the hit." it's 9 times out of 10, the least favorite song of yours is the one that the people like the most. Yeah. Maybe not your very least favorite, but down there in the ones that were about to get thrown in the trash.
One aspect of both Glenn Russell's work and Ole Yeller, basically your rock work, that I've always liked and I think is somewhat unique to your style is the way that you play with the high end of the guitar. It almost sounds like a different instrument than a guitar at times, and it pulls even some pretty raucous songs into a little more accessible, maybe friendly sounding sound. And I'm not even really sure how to turn this into a question. It's just something I've noticed.
And well, some of my favorite guitar players do that. Big Country comes to mind when you say playing way up high. They did that a lot. I mean, those early 80s guitar players, you know, just where that high note just gives you that tingle. U2, the Edge was one of my favorite guitar players. He'd go up there and slide up to that high note, and you just, whoa, you get that chill. Neil Young, of course, he's trying to think of like a hurricane, that song. You know, he gets up in that high register, just knocks you out. You know, it's just great.
Thank you. every waking hour we are lost. Someone's gonna save our life. Get a little bit too cross. Someone out there is gonna save.
Sounder record from Ole Yeller, that's Ghost, and then from Nuzzle we heard Under the Tree. Yeah, sometimes the more obscure it is, the more obvious the genius to me. That lyric really hits me, but I love that song musically so much as well. Well, here's the final segment of my conversation with Rich Manson.
I didn't really thought about it much, but Maggie Montgomery, the general manager here at Northern Community Radio, asked me in one of our shows where she sat in and talked to me about, you know, the state of music in different parts of Minnesota. And I hadn't even prepared an answer or even thought about that in terms of the Iron Range, but obviously the biggest thing was I felt like you've been a real catalyst in Northern Minnesota, particularly in the Iron Range. You got Iroma formed, and it seems to me, and maybe this is more impression than known fact, we haven't talked about this, but that you've kind of shown a lot of musicians how to take things into their own hands, and maybe also shown them that you got to work your ass off, you know, in order to get any attention, and also to, you know, basically in music, you can have fun, but you really got to work hard at the same time. Do you think that, you know, I know that you probably don't want to pat yourself on the back too much, but is it, what existed before you came up and what exists now in terms of venues and everything?
There's always been plenty of songwriters up here, but, you know, they're all thinking they can't get a gig or nobody wants to hear their stuff or nobody wants to hear a full night of original music. And I just put together some shows where, well, get three different bands, you know, and everybody plays originals, but it's a different band every set. And I guess I did that. And, you know, it's like going back to what we were talking about before, everybody else stepped in and said, well, I can do that, you know, and everybody jumped in. And now, you know, there's more original music going around. And with the 218 in Virginia, you know, they have original music all the time. And actually, they prefer original music at that place. And the crowd does, you know, the crowd wants to hear originals, and it's great. And, you know, another place around the state that we've been to a lot lately, Grand Marais, Cook County, is really getting behind their musicians and their original music, and it's happening around. And I guess in Bemidji, they've got a club there. We haven't been there yet, but they only have original music. It's called Blue Ox, isn't it?
Actually, that closed this last year, but yeah.
That's too bad.
Yeah, they were aggressive in their booking, but Bemidji has some venues, and actually Bemidji has a pretty good musical tradition. There was a lot of There was a lot of people that were kind of back to the landers that came up there in the 70s from like Kansas area and stuff. And it was sort of this self-selected, more simple lifestyle. And they were creative musically inclined. And so, and they're up there and they have kids. And so there's, mm-hmm. there's an influence there that sort of carries on. Mm. And Jim Miller probably would have been the patriarch of that over time, who just passed away. But, mm-hmm. but in general, a lot of the small towns used to, you know, people want to hear top 40 covers, the kind of stuff that would drive me insane most of the time. And not even really cleverly chosen covers, and that seems to be changing, and it's nice to have venues that where people will come out to and support the venue and support the bands. And it's almost like even if people wanted to do it before, it wasn't possible because there mm-hmm. wasn't the interest.
Yeah, I think I don't think I'm leading the charge, but I'm part of it and I support it, and I think it's happening all over the state where there's these little pockets of goodness where there people are getting out and seeing music. And I saw it in Texas. You know, there's bands down there that never left the state. They make a living playing music, just going around Texas playing. We're a Texas band. I thought, you know, I want to be a Minnesota band and play all over Minnesota. And there's plenty of venues. And you know, you talk to the venue owners, and these clubs are struggling to stay open. And well, you know what you should do is start having more original music, start putting on showcases, get these people that love music out, and you know, it's better than staying at home watching The Voice or America's Top Model or any of that crap, you know. Get out and see music. It's entertainment, and it's real, you know, it's happening right before your eyes. Anything could happen. There's no commercials.
Well, there's certainly something about, you know, musicians that are totally invested, especially when they're on that level, you know. They're probably not getting much money, especially if there's four bands or three bands in a night.
Well, and that's why we're staying local, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, we can't afford to go all the way across the country. You know, we're in Minnesota. We can go anywhere, and, you know, whatever we make is what we make.
It's possible that Duluth might be more interesting right now than the Twin Cities, and that's saying a hell of a lot. What do you think about that? I mean, in terms of the music that's coming out of there and the scene that is developed there, and it seems more like the bands that are basing themselves out of Duluth these days are, or, you know, or that's their main stage for playing, both the fact that there's, you know, the venues and stuff like that, but also they're Charlie Parr would probably be a perfect example of that, where mm-hmm. he is... There's no persona, there's no act. He's, you know, and it's just mm-hmm. a place where the musicians are, they're very real. Authentic, I think, is the wrong word, but there's somehow they're living it. You know, Brothers Burn Mountain, you know, they live in their each individual cabins out in the woods, and they're completely headlong into mm-hmm. creating art, I guess, music, but even more than that, just creating something new in the world that's really... hopefully profound, I think, is what their goal is.
Yeah, it'd be scary to see what would happen if Duluth became the next Seattle or something. It'd be pretty wild to see what would happen, because there's definitely the potential. There's definitely the musicianship, and there's the community, and there's... But boy, what a salty town. Ooh, it's a port town, that's for sure.
Thanks to Rich Madsen for joining me on Center Stage Minnesota. I think Rich might be mad at me if I didn't represent all sides, and he does like to rock it. And here's one from the Glen Russells that I'm going to say is not necessarily a public service announcement. It's no time left. We gotta play fast. The difference you make is surely gonna last. Step on the gas, forget about the brakes. Will they ever know the world but your face? Gonna smoke, smoke, smoke. Got That was the Glenn Russells, Smoke My Lungs Out, from Honey, Grease, and Neptune. And that change of pace here, Molly Mayer and her Disbelievers from a 2007 release, Balms of Gilead, taking us out today with Tugboat.
Take you in.